committee will come to order. Good morning. This is the first hearing of the Oversight and Investigations Subcommittee of Energy and Commerce for the 116th Congress. I want to start out by thanking.
I'm Dan Diamond. This is Pulse Check, and that was Representative Diana DeGette gaveling her subcommittee into session last week. DeGette, a Colorado Democrat, is poised to be one of the key overseers of the Trump administration and the healthcare industry in this Congress. We sat down in DeGette's office on Wednesday afternoon to discuss her priorities and what she's already learned from her first hearing, which focused on family separations. But first, if you like Pulse Check, you can help us by rating and reviewing the show. Just search for Politico's Pulse Check on your favorite podcast app. And check our archives for related conversations. Representative DeGette is the co-chair of the Pro-Choice Caucus, and last week we had Planned Parenthood's leader, Lena Wen, on the show. 2 weeks ago, our guest was Senator Chuck Grassley, who leads the Senate Finance Committee, if you'd like a different perspective on this Congress. And even Representative Joe Kennedy, who's DeGette's vice chair, was on the show a few years ago. You can find links to those conversations, as well as relevant articles, in the show notes. And now, here's my conversation with Congresswoman Diana DeGette. Congresswoman Diana DeGette, welcome to Politico Pulse Check.
So good to be with you.
I want to talk about your agenda now, but first to set the scene, flashback a few months ago. Democrats taking control of the House, all kinds of priorities for this new Congress. What was on the top of your agenda? What did you want to investigate?
Well, so the Oversight and Investigations Subcommittee of Energy and Commerce investigates everything in the jurisdiction of the committee. And in our view, the members of that committee, our view, our jurisdiction is the world. So if you think about it, every time you watch the nightly news, at least I come up with three new ideas for hearings. And so really the challenge is to try to narrow that down. And I, what I decided, the first hearing that I thought was really urgent was to have a hearing about what was going on with the kids at the border. Back last spring, I was the senior Democrat on this subcommittee. And when President Trump first issued his executive order separating the families, I was, like everybody, horrified about that. And so I asked my chairman at that time, a Republican, that if we could have hearings about what was going on and how we could get those kids reunited with their families. He said, oh, let's just see how it works out. And I felt this huge sense of urgency because the longer the kids are separated from the parents, the worse the psychological impacts on them and the harder it'll be to get them reunited. So I decided I wanted to make that a top priority, especially when over the fall and then just most recently last month, both the Office of Inspector General and the General Accounting Office came up with reports saying that actually the kids were being separated much earlier than the April order, and there may still be thousands of kids out there. So I decided to do that as my first hearing, and we just had that hearing. And then a couple of other issues that are really urgent that I'm thinking about. We're going to have a hearing in about a week on the impact of the reversal, the Trump administration's reversal of the Obama administration's EPA rules that impact climate change. Because climate change issues and developing legislation is one of the top priorities of the Democratic caucus.
And certainly in Colorado, Congress. Too, which you
right.
represent.
Right, exactly, in Colorado, but in this Congress. And then there are a whole series of healthcare issues. I'm the co-chair of the Diabetes Caucus, and along with Tom Reed from New York, a Republican who's my co-chair, we conducted sort of a renegade investigation on insulin pricing.
What do you mean by renegade?
Well, I tried to get my committee to hold an investigation on insulin pricing sort of as a example, a case study of what's going on with prescription drug pricing, and they refused to do it. So Tom and I went rogue, and we did our own investigation.
And insulin prices, insulin, the drug that diabetics need to survive, right. Those prices have gone up twice, three times over the past
right.
decade.
Right, and insulin is something that's been around in some form for 100 years. So why?
We will come back to the drug pricing issues and ACA, but I do want to start with this family separations crisis that you drilled into last week at your hearing. There are numerous Democratic committees that are looking at this. The overall oversight committee, the Judiciary Committee, the Appropriations Committee, they all are investigating family separations. How do the different committees decide who's going to ask what questions, which witnesses are going to be called? What role do you play in that?
Well, a lot of people are interested in this issue, obviously. But what I'm really focusing on, the issues in the jurisdiction of the Energy and Commerce Committee.
But to your point, and that could be almost anything.
Well, right? but we're the committee of jurisdiction for the Office of Refugee Resettlement of Health and Human Services. So I'm not looking into the ICE issues. I'm not looking into the issues of how ICE decided to do this.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
I'm looking into what happened once those kids were taken from their parents, put into the custody of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, and how are we going to get them back? Because that's under the jurisdiction of our committee. This is true with lots of issues. I mean, it's true with the separation issue, but lots of other issues. A lot of committees are very interested in doing investigations, but for many of those issues, Energy and Commerce is the one with the legislative ability. So there's going to be, you're going to be seeing a lot of hearings, and I think that's great. The more people can shine the light on what's happening, the better. But we're the ones with the technical expertise in these areas who can then go in and do legislation to fix it.
My beat at Politico is very HHS focused. We've had the previous refugee office head, Bob Kerry, on this podcast before. I'm curious, Congresswoman, what you learned from last week's hearing. What new insights came out of that hearing?
Well, one thing we learned was the severe and long-term and lasting impacts that these separations can have on the children, and how time is really of the essence. But the other thing I learned is that people like Commander White, who testified at the hearing, who is the career ORR individual in charge of this, and who was put in charge of trying to reunite these families, how he had been telling the administration for months not to do this, that it was a bad idea. That was really, I think that was really striking to hear straight from his mouth.
And not only did he say it was a bad idea, he had encouraged the Trump appointees to try and proactively block this policy almost a year before it took effect.
Right, right.
You tried to get HHS Secretary Alex Azar to testify at your subcommittee hearing. This became a bit of a news story. I know I wrote about it, the little bit of tug of war that went back and forth. And I spoke to officials around Azar who said, one, this was an unfair request to have a cabinet secretary at a subcommittee hearing. To our listeners, that might seem like a distinction without a difference. Who cares what cabinet secretary testifies where? But there are so many subcommittees that if a cabinet secretary testifies at one subcommittee, potentially Secretary Azar could be on the Hill four times a week at different subcommittee hearings. Sounds like you have a response to that.
Well. First of all, the Trump administration, in its first 2 years under a Republican Congress, just sort of got used to coasting by. So they got used to not having to show up at all. And I think it's been a shock to the Trump administration that not only do their senior officials have to show up because it's Congress's constitutional Article I duty to do investigations, but that they have to show up and give evidence and they have to provide documents. The reason we wanted Secretary Azar, and we may still try to have Secretary Azar, is because the buck stops with him. And Energy and Commerce has jurisdiction over HHS the agency which Secretary Azar heads. And Oversight and Investigations is the investigating subcommittee. So it's really, I think, an excuse for him to say, well, there's too many committees, we can't be going around to all of them. This is underscored by the fact that the person HHS did send, Commander White, had no knowledge of who was making the decisions to separate these kids from their parents. He said, I told him not to do it. I told a lot of the senior management, and I don't know who ultimately made the decision. That's why we really want to have Secretary Azar, so he can explain to us how this decision was made over the objections of the career service people who have the kids' interests at heart.
I do a lot of reporting talking to career staff at HHS, and they were both proud of Commander White for being on your hearing and testifying honestly about what he saw. But there was a lot of anger that a career official is the one who has become the face of this policy that he actually opposed, that political
right.
appointees have yet to make their way to the Hill to talk
about
this. Well,
and I said to Commander White that I really admired his honesty, and I admired what he tried to do. He was just carrying out orders from above. We need to figure out where it came from. And we're not, as I say, we're not done investigating. That's the other thing. The Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee has a long tradition of thorough investigations. So we're not just going to do these one-off hearings to get press. We're going to keep pressing for the documents that we asked for that were never provided. And when the secretary comes for his budget hearing in March, we plan to ask him the questions he wouldn't answer before.
Well, so one more Secretary Azar question. You have priorities beyond family separation. You alluded to insulin. Drug prices are a major priority across the caucus, and Republicans share this too. You could be working with Secretary Azar and the administration on legislation. How do you balance pushing HHS Secretary Azar with the same goal of trying to bring down drug prices?
Well, it's not either or. And I've been in Congress a long time now. I'm on several substantive committees as well, subcommittees, and I work quite well on legislation, but you still have an oversight responsibility. And I've worked with secretaries under many administrations. You might have to bring them in to talk about some policy that they did, but we also need technical advice on legislation. I really think the key is to be fair and above board. So to not be, and I've told my Democrats, and I also talked to Congressman Guthrie, the ranking Republican on the subcommittee, we're not going to have gotcha hearings. We're not going to try to trap witnesses. We're not going to try to put words in their mouth. And I've instructed both sides of the aisle, we're going to have that comity. But it is our job to get to the bottom of this.
You mentioned the emotional trauma that these children are suffering. What happened to the families when kids were taken away forcibly? Here's a clip from Jennifer Podkill from an organization called Kids in Need of Defense. She testified at your hearing last week discussing the impact of the administration's policy.
There is a mother who is separated from all four of her children. And when she was finally waiting the return of her youngest, she was given the wrong baby.
How do you feel when you hear that?
It just boggles the mind, and as a mother myself, it just makes you feel absolutely devastated to think that this woman lost her baby and then she was given the wrong baby. I went down to the border in June, and I met with some women who were breastfeeding when they took away their babies, and they didn't know where their babies were.
The U.S. government is being sued over family separations. I want to quote Attorney Stanton Jones, who's representing some of the families. Quote, "The government's actual conduct of tearing children away from their parents in a way that was designed to deliberately inflict, emotional trauma on those people is unlawful." Congresswoman, you're a lawyer. Could any officials go to jail over this?
Well, it's certainly immoral. I don't know the law that they may have broken, especially when they were doing it, unfortunately, under the orders of their supervisors. But if you can imagine, we went to the holding areas, and they would take the parents to go to court under the new order that every parent had to go through the Department of Justice, criminal proceedings. They would take the parents to court. While the parents were in court being arraigned, they would take the children away and send them to one of the tender care facilities. And when the parents came back, the kids would be gone. Now, that's just un-American. Just un-American. I don't know if it's a criminal offense, but if it is, someone should be prosecuted.
Last question on the family separation policy. Some Republican members of your subcommittee didn't bother to ask a single question of the witnesses at your hearing last week. Representative Jeff Duncan, for instance, spent 5 minutes talking about sex crimes and coyotes at the border. As chair, do you rebuke them? Do you shrug?
Well, one thing I've learned, everybody has 5 minutes. They have their 5 minutes to make their statements. I prefer to use my 5 minutes to try to get answers from the witnesses. I think that's why we have the hearing. But I feel like members, if they want to take their 5 minutes to make a statement, they're entitled to do that, so long as they are not berating the witnesses or haranguing them.
So it's out of your control, essentially, what the Republicans choose to do if they're out of hearing.
Well, I mean, I think people from both sides of the aisle do that. People from both sides of the aisle choose to make statements, and it's not my method of oversight, but some people, they, you know, that's what they do.
Moving to the broader committee and some of your broader priorities, the Energy and Commerce Committee held a hearing on ACA sabotage, as Democrats call it, this week on Wednesday. Do you feel like that that's still a burning priority, given that overall ACA enrollment has been relatively flat year over year?
Well, ACA enrollment, the last figures I saw actually went down a little bit this year, in part because the Trump administration cut the funding for the advertising and the enrollment. But it has been fairly steady. But part of the issue that we've had is, number one, we're not expanding it every place we need to expand it. And number two, a lot of people are having enormous copays and enormous deductibles. And people tend to see that at this time of the year, too, when their new insurance policy comes in and then their deductibles go into effect. When you combine that with the increased prices of prescription drugs and some of the other increased prices that we're seeing, it's really a burden on families this time of year.
Would you say that prescription drugs are more of a burning issue for you right now?
I think that the issue of stabilization of the ACA and the risk corridors and making sure that that we stabilize the deductibles and all of that and pre-existing condition, making sure people with pre-existing conditions can get care, all of those things are important. But prescription drugs are part of that. I was just talking to someone earlier today. Members of Congress are also healthcare consumers. And I think sometimes the industry forgets that. But my daughter, who's 25, so she'll be on my insurance one more year, is a type 1 diabetic. And so we see the effect of these policies. I have a good policy through the DC exchange, like all the members of Congress do. She went to get her insulin. She has to have insulin to live. She's a type 1 diabetic. She went to get her first prescription of the year, and even with good private insurance, she came back with a bill for $300 for two bottles of insulin. And this is happening all around the country. So that's why prescription drug pricing is obviously of concern, not to just people who are in the exchanges, but to every single American.
You've led requests for information into Eli Lilly, some of the other makers of insulin medication. I believe those responses were due today as we're recording this podcast. Have you heard back from those drug makers?
I haven't. As we speak right now today at 3 o'clock, this is the first I've been in the office the whole day. So I'll let you know if we got the responses.
It's possible it's in a pile somewhere.
I will say that when Congress Congressman Reed and I did our rogue investigation last year. We worked with all of the insulin companies, and we worked with all the different advocacy groups and the patients and the preferred benefit managers and everybody in the system, and everybody was very cooperative. And so I think that through this investigation, I have no doubt they'll be cooperative.
Are you planning on holding a hearing? Or
yes.
So no matter what they tell you in their response
Yes,
letters,
we're going to have a hearing.
When will that hearing be?
It'll be later this spring. One of the issues with prescription drug pricing in general and insulin pricing as sort of a case study is that that everybody's pointing the finger at everybody else. So everybody says, well, we're the good guys in this. We're trying to keep prices low, but these other guys are really the ones that are pushing the prices upward. And so I think it's going to be important to get everybody in the same room to talk about their perspectives. My general sense on insulin and on prescription drugs in general is part of the problem is that the whole system is so opaque. You can't really understand what's going on. And one thing we need to do is really shine the light on how pricing happens.
Eli Lilly has hiked their prices on insulin many times. Secretary Azar was a top executive at Eli Lilly while it was hiking insulin prices. Have you ever talked with him about this?
I have not. That's another question to ask him at that March hearing.
I feel like your list is already long. I don't need to be contributing to it.
No, I've already thought of that.
Your role as chair of the Oversight and Investigations Subcommittee of the Energy and Commerce Committee, and as a reporter who works with a word count, I might humbly suggest that maybe there's a way to shorten that at some point.
But there's got to be an acronym somewhere for that.
We usually just say O&I, V&C, but we're also told to steer away from acronyms. But you have this power to look into different areas of government and beyond. Is there a limit? What happens if the Trump administration says, okay, we will not send Secretary Azar to a hearing? What can you actually do?
Well, we do have subpoena authority, and we want to be judicious with how we exercise those subpoenas, but we are prepared to use it if the administration won't cooperate. For example, for our hearing that we had on the kids at the border, we requested a number of documents from HHS, and they didn't provide them. Then Commander White came in, and he was talking about memos and emails that he had written. They were never produced. We need to get those documents, and we're entitled to get them.
So I remember that back and forth. I remember the news coverage of HHS not providing what you asked for, and yet it's possible they won't provide that right away either. So what do you do in that case?
Well, I prefer to hope that they will work with us to give us the documents. We can subpoena them.
Among the other issues that you've raised for investigation, the administration's decision on fetal tissue research. It's reviewing about $100 million worth of research that it does using fetal tissue. Anti-abortion groups have said the administration should find different ways of doing that research. And there are some folks at HHS who seem to think that that's a good idea. What are you hoping to discover if you start asking questions there?
Having been on this subcommittee for my entire time in Congress, which is over 20 years, and also being the co-chair of the Pro-Choice Caucus in Congress, what I have seen is numerous hearings around fetal tissue research, around birth control, sex education, abortion, issues like that. All of these hearings that we've had tend to be based on religious or moral principles. I think it's really important to talk about fetal tissue research and all of these other issues from a scientific perspective. And the reason is, if we're not making public policy that's based on science, then number one, you're wasting money, and number two, you could actually be harming people. One example I like to give, some years ago, we had some hearings on abstinence-only birth sex education. And there was actually one study back then that some scientists did that showed when you did abstinence-only sex education, it increased the rates of unwanted teen sexual activity. And so really, we don't want to be doing that. With fetal tissue research, I was a member of the select committee that was appointed by then Speaker Ryan to look into Planned Parenthood and fetal tissue research.
This was in the wake of the videos into Planned Parenthood that went viral, and
right.
Some Democrats said were misleading videos.
Well, but the so-called experts that came in on fetal tissue research weren't even fetal tissue researchers. And fetal tissue research has helped us discover most vaccines used today, and has very stringent ethical oversight. Well, you would have never known that from those hearings. So that's why I want to do hearings about the usefulness of fetal tissue research and how we protect the highest ethical standards.
We've talked about drug prices, family separations, fetal tissue. Are there any other healthcare priorities that you are going to be exploring in your role?
Well, there are just a number of issues that are health related. We come up with new issues every day around prescription drug pricing, but also, for example, contamination of drugs when we saw the contamination of the talcum powder, for example,
from Johnson and Johnson.
From Johnson and Johnson. There are just a number of issues that come up every day, and we're going to be looking at all of this. We don't have unlimited staff, though, so we have to really focus on what we think is key at that time, and to get the research in so that we can give it to the substantive committees to develop legislation.
I'd like to spend the last few minutes going beyond your role and thinking about someone who made a major impact on your career and many other Democrats. That would be John Dingell, who served for 59 years in Congress. He was a titan in Washington, D.C. I was at your family separations hearing last week. The room was the John D. Dingell room. You called him a mentor. You flew to Michigan for his funeral service, though I understand weren't able to attend because of local weather conditions. What's the best piece of advice that Congressman Dingell gave you?
Congressman Dingell, he gave me so much advice. And I think maybe the best advice he gave me was to always ask the questions thoroughly and to get the information. When we had that hearing last Wednesday, that was ironically the day that Mr. Dingell was dying. And it was my first day as the chairman of this very important subcommittee. And so I really felt sort of the mantle of history going onto my shoulders because I was his protege. He actually got me on that committee as a freshman member.
Which is very unusual.
And took me under his wing and really showed me how to ask questions of witness, how to be thorough. And I feel like I owe him my career.
So asking questions thoroughly?
Yep, and getting all the information.
I did the math. You would have to serve another 37 years until the year 2056 to match his time in Congress. Do you see that happening for you? Do you see a young member of Congress perhaps racking up nearly six decades?
No one will ever again meet that standard, both in terms of longevity and in terms of legislative accomplishments. He really was a giant when you look at his legislation. And people like me can only hope to just continue his legacy for as long as we have.
You talk about Congressman Dingell as a mentor for you. Are you a mentor to, say, any of the new House Democrats who have come in with a lot of attention?
We have 8 new members on the Energy and Commerce Committee. They're not brand new members of Congress. They've been around for a term or two. And all 8 of those members were people who I really encouraged to apply to come on Energy and Commerce and I also lobbied for them. I think they're all really bright aggressive. I think they're going to be good.
What's a piece of advice you would give to a freshman member of Congress now?
I think the freshman members of Congress need to embrace the fact that they're one of the biggest classes in decades. They need to embrace their diversity and their wonderful opinions, but they also need to really learn how to write legislation, and they need to work with members who have been here to pass really robust legislation. We have a tremendous opportunity here, and it's a bipartisan opportunity, I think, because so much of what we're facing, the prescription drug prices and the kids at the border and these issues, they're not partisan issues. And so I think these new members can look at their great ideas and their diversity, use that as a real tool to help encourage bipartisanship.
Congresswoman, we will see what your investigations and legislation bring this year. Thank you
great.
For joining Politico.
Thanks
Pulse
for having
Check.
Me. I appreciate it.
That's it for Pulse Check this week. My thanks to Congresswoman Diana DeGette and Ryan Brown in her office for making time, and Dave Shaw of Politico for producing. If you like Pulse Check, you can help us by rating and reviewing the show. If you have feedback, you can find me by email at ddiamond@politico.com. And you can find a new episode of Politico Pulse Check in your podcast player next week.